Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show on this very special Mother's Day edition. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you prefer, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before I introduce my very special guest for tonight, I want to make a few announcements. First, we're starting to get ready for our September Healing Weekend, which is going to be in Los Angeles, California. And I think I mentioned last week that I went to the hotel where we're going to be staying at the Sheraton Four Points right by the Los Angeles Airport, LAX. It's only 5 minutes away, and they have a free shuttle bus for those who are coming in from out of town. And we're expecting a wonderful group of women, not only from the West Coast, but from all over, including from Canada. So, in other parts of the world, I'm really excited about this healing weekend and being in California again for the first time in a few years as far as our healing weekend will be really exciting for me to reconnect with some of my California sisters. And although we all do wish we could be California girls, I'm going to be one only for a week, but at least I'll be there and I'll be able to spend some time with our women. So the weekend is September 21st and 22nd. Some people will be coming in a day or two ahead of time and a day or two after time. We're going to have some wonderful workshops there, including Jason from our Adult Children of Gay Fathers group will be giving a seminar. We're going to have a seminar from women who are on their next phase of life on the steps they took as far as healing and how to get you to that next step. And also some other wonderful workshops. Mike, our own private investigator for the group, said he would somehow stop by there, even though he feels very shy about speaking. He would like to at least meet our group and do a little speaking, I'm sure. So we're going to have a bunch of wonderful speakers there. So if you are interested, there's no cost for the weekend. This is my gift to our women. And we do it twice a year. And the only cost you have is the hotel, which is very inexpensive because I get a group rate, and the travel and accommodations and one night's dinner that we all chip in for, and that pays for our rooms for the weekend. So if you would like to come or you're thinking about coming and you would like the details, please write to me again at bonkay@aol.com. I would also like to remind you that we have our online support chat on Thursday and Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And also we have our Adult Children of Gay Fathers support chat on Wednesday evenings. So if you need support and you would like to join me, please let me know. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce my very special guest tonight. I was very fortunate to have Alexa on our show before. I hope I don't screw up your name, Alexa. Servadidio?
Yes, that's perfect.
Am I getting better?
It's perfect.
Thank you. It's such a hard name for me. I don't know why. I think because I'm getting old. But I think if you pronounce it just the way it looks, Servadidio, you can get it down right.
Yes,
and Alexa
yes.
was on our show once before, and I've asked her if she could be kind of a semi-regular guest whenever she has time because she's so effective. And the women who listened to her were so impressed with her. And Alexa's, from New Jersey. She has a practice there. I'm sorry, in New York.
Yes.
Has a practice there in New York, correct?
Yes, in Mamaroneck, New York.
Right, which is where?
It is in
the Westchester area.
It's about 35 minutes from New York City.
Okay, so it's close.
Yes.
For people who are in New York, but it's also close if you live anywhere in the world, because Alexa also does therapy, through telephone and Skype. Is that correct, Alexa, through Skype, if I recall?
Yes, I'm going to start with Skype. I haven't yet set that up with liability and with insurance, but I'm in the process of getting that set up.
Mm-hmm. So if you need a good therapist, and the best part of it all is that Alexa does take insurance plans, correct?
Yes, I take Medicare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, PALMCO, and self-pay.
That's great. I think I'm going to be coming to you soon. Now with my new insurance, I feel really confident I can get you to be my therapist, Alexa. Because you know what?
Thank you.
I think even counselors need therapists sometimes, you know, when they need to work things out. Because even, you know, the best of therapists and counselors have their own issues also, wouldn't you say so?
Oh, yes. I find the best therapists out there have their own therapist and have been in therapy for a very long time. I know when I was going for my postgraduate work, it was part of the program. It was the requirement that you be in therapy. Because I think what they say is, how can you be a therapist if you really don't know what it means to be on the other side?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place of vulnerability.
Exactly. And I think that it's really great that people have that opportunity when they're going for training to see what it's like on the other side. Because a lot of times, I think if you don't have a problem, it's really hard to work with it. I know, especially like, for instance, in recovery, they always tell people, well, you have to be in recovery from drugs or alcohol in order to be effective with that population. And I say also, if you've been in a marriage to a gay man, it's really hard for people to relate to this unless you've experienced this phenomenal type of situation, which isn't like other kinds of divorces and marriages, because it's like everything there plus another 100 issues. So
mm-hmm.
That's why I think that whenever you have issues, it's always good to find someone who you can sort it out with and who understands it and somebody who can relate to it also. You know, while you're on the subject of therapists, if you don't mind, because this is such a big issue to our women, and I
mm-hmm.
thought maybe you could shed a little insight. I hate to put you on the spot. But women are always asking me how they can find a therapist that they can mesh with. Because I always tell women it may not be the best match when you find someone, and you don't have to feel like you're forcing, you know, a square peg into a round hole. If you feel uncomfortable with the situation, and if you've given it a few weeks try and you're making very, you know, no progress and you're not happy, you don't have to feel that you're a failure therapy. It's just not necessarily a good match. Now, would you agree with that?
Yes, I agree with that a lot. I actually have been speaking about that a lot to many people, that I think it's a bit, when you're looking for a therapist, this is really for your personal growth. This is for your healing to address whatever issues you're going through. And I think having that sort of match or that feeling comfortable, being able to be vulnerable to you know, really explore what's going on and open up is so important. And I think that's why, you know, so many people, they either seek friends or family members, and that doesn't work. So I think it's when you're really looking for a therapist, it's almost, you know, like a job interview. You really want to say, okay, am I matching with this person? Do we have, you know, similar ideas or similar outlooks? Because there's so many different theories and so many different ways therapists work. And it's really,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's nothing personal, and the therapist shouldn't take it personal, and the client shouldn't take it personal. It's really about saying, okay, where do we fit? Just as any type of job, or if you're interviewing someone to do work in your home, there has to be a certain compatibility. I think it's even
mm-hmm.
more important when you're dealing with such personal issues, and if there's trauma or abuse, it's really important to find someone that you feel comfortable, that you trust. Because I think you have to start trusting and respecting what that therapist is saying and being able to kind of be guided through this process and being able to show that vulnerability and to be open to the healing process and not worrying about judgment, not worrying about failure. Because I think a good therapist should be really providing a safe environment where there's no judgment, there's no negativity. Of course, it's going to, you know, get rough depending on what issues you're going through, and you know there could be a lot of emotional, you know, pain. But I think it's always feeling comfortable that the therapist can kind of reel you back in, that you can go to that place and kind of be reeled back in. And then, you know, I find the goal of therapy that I tell a lot of my clients, the tools I teach you, I hope later on when you feel that you've processed everything, you can do what we've done together on your own. So you'll be able to learn all these tools and utilize them, develop them, use them for yourself, and hopefully teach other your friends, your family, and be able to master them.
Well, I think that is really such a great point, because I think when you're going through therapy, and maybe sometimes I think therapists forget this, or maybe they really never ever sensitized to it. But a lot of times the people are in a very vulnerable state, and they're looking for that help and guidance. And if they're not getting it, sometimes there's just not a connection. I don't always connect with everyone, you know, and I know that within a short amount of time. And, you know, you try your best as a counselor or a therapist to make that connection. But if you see that you can't, you know, you have to be strong enough to say, you know, this just isn't working. You know, let's see if we can find another alternative for you. But people are so vulnerable, I think they're so afraid to say anything, as if it's going to be their failure, or that, you know, they're not going to be viewed as being, you know, rational, or, you know, there's something wrong with me because I'm not getting something out of this. But the therapist is a helper, you know, the therapist is a professional, but, you know, they're human beings also. And they also have certain prejudices and certain, you know, feelings. I mean, I know that in a perfect world, everybody would be perfectly objective. But, for instance, I've sent people to Christian counselors, and I think they get very screwed up advice personally, you know, when they can't acknowledge the situation and they say, well, you can just pray this away. And, you know, if you pray hard enough, things will be better. I mean, that's not what I call counseling. And yet people do feel as if they're failing at their marriages because the marriages aren't working after they pray. So I feel that that's not really legitimate advice. And if people have certain prejudices against, you know, breaking up marriages, that's another issue, that you have to work to stay together and maybe, you know, it takes two to make a marriage. And in most cases, I do agree with that, but when you have a gay partner, it only takes one, and it's the gay partner who's going to break that marriage, because there's nothing you can do as a straight wife to make that marriage work when you're married to a gay man. So I think that, you know, there's not like a lot of people who understand the situation out there, and that's why women, I tell them, if you're not making a connection, if your therapist doesn't understand your situation, you have to exit and not spend months and years with something that can't be productive for you.
I think also
give me some ideas on when people are looking for a therapist, what kinds of questions should they ask?
I think really also finding, you know, if what is going on with them, where are, finding a therapist that will be able to work with where they are now. Because I also find a lot when I work with clients, because of my religious background, and also I mean, I do not bring that into my therapy sessions unless someone requests it. So I make sure, I think, also looking for boundaries with a therapist. You know, if the, is a therapist able to put their personal beliefs aside when they're working professional? I think that's definitely something to really explore with your therapist. And I think if you are going for Christian counseling, it is meeting with that counselor and saying, listen, you know, just, you know, this is, it can't be such strict boundaries. Are, is, as that therapist, are they able to be more objective and have a little, and allow this person to explore these things without being, feeling that they're being punished or they're being judged. But I think also finding out what therapists, you know, what are their specialties? What type of theory do they practice? Because there's a lot of different, you know, psychodynamic, person-oriented, environmental, you know, skill-focused, short-term therapy, long-term therapy. I think it's also maybe before or while you're looking for a therapist, look up the different types of therapy, you know, psychoanalytic, and seeing kind of what their theories is, there are, is what their practices are, and finding, okay, what fits with you. And I think some therapists, I usually involve a bunch of different theories, and then I kind of put, make it my own, and then also start addressing it towards the client that I'm working with. So I think finding, you know, you should know within the first session, the first couple of sessions, if your gut is saying, you know, I just don't feel that I can be vulnerable with this person, that I can be open. I think that's really, you know, and I think also being able to discuss that with a therapist, because a therapist should be able to say, okay, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, why don't you let, you know, did I say something that you felt judged? Do I, you know, did something happen? And I think that's a really first big step to be able to see if you can have that conversation, that dialogue with the therapist. and to see where they are. Are they rigid? Are they able to really explore it? Because I think it's so many different things. I think, you know, we're not mind readers, and sometimes when we see a person, we kind of put an ideal, or we think this is what this person's life is like, or this is what this therapist is like. So I think it's really putting, you know, everything on the table and saying, listen, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm going through. What do you think? How do you feel about it? What, you know, what do you usually do in these type of circumstances? Have you worked with this population before? You know, and this is what I'm looking for. And seeing if the therapist really is saying things that kind of ring true with you or something that you can work with. I mean, obviously therapy is not always going to be easy, and the therapist's job isn't to sit there and, you know, yes you to death, but they're also not sitting there to tell you exactly what to do. I find a lot of times is I'll provide tools, I'll provide options, or I'll explore so many different options that the client will be able to make the decision on their own. That's usually what my goal is. We can explore everything, but I want my client to come to that decision, to come to that realization through their own discussion, through their own exploration in therapy.
Well, I think that's really great. And you know what I think is really important, Alexa? And this might be something you could put on your, you know, your Facebook site also. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could put together, you know, what to look for when you're looking for a therapist, like a checklist.
Yes.
Because I think this would be so helpful to people because, like I said, people are really vulnerable. I know I can speak on behalf of the women I work with. And when they really need therapy, which I don't provide, you know, psychological therapy. I provide counseling for a particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
But some people need, you know, more intensive therapy, which now I know I can refer them to you, and no matter where they are, you can help them. But if they want a one-on-one relationship because they live in, you know, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they really want to be with someone, at least I want them to have the ability to know what they should be looking for. So I think something like that would really be so helpful. Maybe so, if you have time in, you know, the next few weeks, you could put that together.
Yes, I think that's definitely something I would like to address and like to put together, give people a different idea of what they can look for. And I think also, I'm also on a site called Psychology Today, and you can find a therapist in your neighborhood, in your area, what insurance, and they will, and you get to say, you know, what type of group do you work in, individuals, family, you know, domestic violence, ADHD, hoarding, and there's a whole list of your specialties. And what type, you know, what type of theory you practice, what, you know, what type of practice you have, so people can get kind of an outlook, an out view of an idea of what you practice and what, you know, how you do how you have your practice.
I know that for a lot of our women, when they're looking for a therapist, I usually tell them to try to guide them. If you're looking for someone, you know, in the dark there, and you don't have any referrals or know of anyone. You know, try to find someone who has some kind of experience working with women who have had post-traumatic stress or someone who has experience with abuse, domestic abuse. And I don't mean necessarily violence per se, but there's a lot of emotional abuse in these marriages. You know, so sometimes it's those inside black and blue scars that don't come on the outside.
Yes.
But, you know, that's what, you know, how it is when you have emotional abuse.
And just as scarring as physical abuse.
Isn't it?
Yes, and I think that's where the misconception is.
I know, that people don't take it very seriously, you know, who are not the people going through it. I'm saying the people who look at you and they think, well, stop complaining. You can stand up for yourself. What's the big deal? You know, they really don't understand what it's like to have yourself stripped away day by day and lose who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to become someone who is never going to be satisfying their partner or loved one because they can't, and not knowing why, because they're missing that puzzle piece of telling them why.
Yes.
So I think this strips away at you, and I think it loses, you know, who you are. One of the things that I've found is really interesting that you might find as interesting as a therapist, that, you know, in our situation with our women who marry gay men, and once again, even though it sounds isolated, it affects over 4 million women in this country, so I wouldn't exactly say it's very isolated, right?
Mm-hmm,
4 million
yeah.
is a lot of women. But there seems to be a trend in this as far as looking for women, you know, I would say there's a prototype that a gay man looks for when he's looking for a wife, someone he can feel safe with, someone he can feel secure with, someone who, you know, he's hoping against hope that he's not going to have to be gay when he gets married, that he can put those feelings away. So, but in case it doesn't work, then, you know, he's hoping that the person will be understanding. So he's looking for someone who can be, you know, also a sense of support to him. But I've noticed that the majority of the women who go into these marriages are also what I call broken women. They come from families where there's dysfunction or they've been in relationships that are dysfunctional. They're lacking self-esteem. They're willing to settle for less and trying to always fix something that's broken. So do you find that in general with, you know, people who are in relationships that are not healthy relationships?
Yes, I find a lot that it's they try to almost reenact something that happened in their childhood or something that they couldn't fix or something they had no control over because they were a child and something that happened with their parents. So consciously, subconsciously, there's a mate they choose or a mate that is attracted to where they can kind of reenact whatever that theme is. If there's a theme of loss, a theme of abandonment, you know, a theme of chasing, then they can kind of act that out with that partner. And sometimes they don't know that's what they're attracted to, that's what they're doing. That's almost trying to get, you know, closure. And what happens when you keep trying to react something, you know, reenact something from the past, it's you're not going to get, that other person can't give you that closure. That closure has to come from yourself. So I find that they just, you know, keep picking a different person. As I say, you know, different face but same type of person. And they just keep picking and getting more frustrated and even damaged more and hurt because they're saying, I'm failing again. Why can't I just get it right this time? And it's very serious and also very, very dangerous, maybe because of low self-esteem and just being stuck in this cycle that they can't break.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, when you go into a marriage and you're broken to start with, it's easier to just keep breaking somebody down, wouldn't you say so?
Yes. I find usually what I say is, when there's emotional abuse, physical abuse for a long period of time, people really don't say, why don't you just leave? You could tell someone, you can do this. I almost say to a point, it's almost like being a prisoner of war for many, many years, and you're held, you know, captive. And it's mind games. It's torture. It's almost like when sometimes someone's been kidnapped and they have a chance to run out the front door, the kidnapper plays all these mind games that even if the door was open the whole time, that the person could actually run out. They are so scared and so brainwashed that they can't even save themselves, that they just stay stuck in that because of fear, low self-esteem. They've lost, you know, any confidence in themselves. They have no judgment left. They're just such beaten down emotionally, physically, as a person that they don't even hope or see that there's anything better. They said, this is just what I have to deal with. And it's really, really sad, sad time for that person because it's hard for them to reach and get out of that cycle.
You know, one of my women sent me a letter that I'm putting in my May newsletter coming up, you know, next week. I'd just like to share it with you. You know, I'm keeping her name anonymous, as, you know, she requested. But I was just so moved by this letter. It made me so sad. But I thought it brought up a point, you know, that I wanted to bring up to you and see how you felt about it. She talked about, you know, she went to mediation with her ex-husband. She's been raped for the last time by him. We're married 24 years, together 26. The divorce took 2 years and 8 months, although I've complained about the process taking so long. It has really been a time of healing for me. If I knew at the time that I filed for divorce what I know now, I would still be in a fetal position. I have to say that I grew up in an abusive home. After years of therapy, I realized that one of the lessons I learned was that I could love my abuser. I loved my dad, and I knew he loved his children, but he was the type of person that could not handle any disruption. Well, we all know that kids disrupt everything. Now I knew what a toxic lesson I had learned at an early age that would be repeated in my marriage. The physical abuse I suffered as a child was nothing compared to the relentless emotional abuse I suffered in my marriage. I can't even begin to explain the marriage in an email. He was so cold and holding of any affection, so demanding of my time and that I live up to his unrealistic expectations. He was physically abusive on one occasion because I expressed a contrary opinion. The relentless criticism, nagging, badgering, and daily negating of me was unbearable. In my 40s, I developed a debilitating stutter when talking to my husband. I was constantly walking on eggshells, trying to please him and circumvent all obstacles to make his life easier. In some ways, I felt totally responsible for his well-being. And she goes on, and, you know, and talks about this. And you know what? I hate to say this. It really hurts me when I read these letters. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel the pain of these women who are living in these horrible situations. But in so many cases, it's almost as if they go from one bad situation at home and they repeat it again. And I always do say this is learned behavior. But do you think it happens often? Because I find it happening all the time with the women I'm working with.
Yes, I find it happens a lot. It definitely happens a lot. I think it brought up a very interesting topic, what you said about loving, that you can love your abuser. And I think
isn't
that's
that amazing?
Where,
I never thought of that before.
And I think that's where it becomes tricky. That's where that fine line, I think, of guilt, of confusion, of all of this that comes in. If you really don't have an insight of what's going on, you start. I know a lot of the people I've worked with, they said, but I still love him, so I guess I have to deal with this. When you
mm-hmm.
said unconditional love, when you talk about unconditional love, that doesn't mean you have to love that person no matter how much they hit you or verbally abuse you. You can leave. That doesn't mean you don't love that person anymore. So I feel like you can love someone from afar. If they're going to abuse you, being with them is not love. You have to step out. But then I think not feeling guilty that you still have feelings. I find this a lot when there's been abuse or there's been physical abuse, sexual abuse, even, you know, with children or adults, they somehow still find good in their abuser. And they're totally confused, and it's very upsetting, and they don't understand, and they start blaming themselves. That happens. You know, your feelings are irrational. We can't control how we feel. But I think then that also becomes tricky is if you're caught in the feelings. They say, well, I love him, then that must mean I should stay with him and I can't, you know, live without him. And then they stay and endure more abuse. I think it's being able to say, yes, I can still love him, but I have to love him from afar. I have to love myself more to say, I will not be abused. I will not allow myself to be spoken to like this and to be treated like this. And I think if you haven't really learned that from a childhood, you know, with her father, is that you don't expect or you don't even realize that people are supposed to treat you nicely. You think this is how you're supposed to be spoken to. And as children, when you're in those type of homes, you blame yourself. Children always take it on as it's my fault. If I only did this better, if I even did that better, Daddy would love me. So they meet their significant other, and they start acting that out, and then the significant other is pulling back, and they turn back to that young child wanting Daddy's love, wanting Mommy's attention, wanting that, and it becomes this battle and this struggle, and then they're not getting it. So it almost confirms in them again in an irrational manner, they're not good enough. It must be me. Look, this other person is withholding love, is withholding respect for me. And I think that's why I think therapy is so important, is that's hard for anyone to be able to say, you know what, I need to get out of this. This is really tough. And I think that's where, you know, if your friends or people on the outside are judgmental and are saying, you know, you must like it. That's why what you say. That's why you stay. And I think that's what upsets me so much when I hear about people that have been, you know, emotionally abused or physically abused. Well, if they stay, that means they must like it or they don't want to leave. That is not what's going on at all. No one likes to be abused. No one expects to be treated like that. But I think when you've been beaten down for so long, you don't have the strength. You don't know what's out there. You don't expect anything better. When someone doesn't have hope, they can't grow. They don't see any reason, and they're stuck in the negativity, and they're stuck in this doom that they don't see any way out. And why try? Because they don't even care about themselves to try.
Well, I think that's so true because they've been knocked down so much and made to believe that they're worthless. And I think that the issue you brought up about children, you know, in families when they're growing up, that they blame themselves, I really do believe it's because a lot of times when parents are fighting and you're not thinking rationally, you end up fighting about the children. And I saw that happen in my parents' marriage when, you know, my brother and I would go to sleep. We were the two oldest of five. And there was a big gap between the two of us and the three younger ones who came later on. But, you know, my parents would be fighting. Inevitably, the fight would turn to the children. Well, you do this wrong with her. You do this wrong with him. This is why she's like that. So we always felt they were fighting over us. And even though they waited till we went to bed to do it, you know, we still heard them fighting about us. So we always felt that we were responsible for the unhappiness in their marriage. So I think a lot of times when people are blaming themselves that they're not making their parents happy, it's because their parents are telling them that message. You know, it's because of you that this is happening or because of you. You know, I read a book today. I'm helping somebody edit a book, and she wrote a comment in there. She had a baby, and she felt like for 20 years that she was, you know, the caretaker. She had no life for herself, and I'm sure those feelings reflected to her child. You know, when you tell your children that, you know, I'm sacrificing my whole life for you, you know, kids don't want to hear this. I mean, kids want to feel valued and treasured, not that they're a burden to their parents. Would you say that's true?
Yes, and I work with a lot of parents, too, over boundaries and what things are sacred and what things should not be discussed in front of the children. And I think a lot of people say, oh, you know, they understand, it's fine, they know it's not their fault. No, there are certain things that have to be sacred, that have to have boundaries. I think that's what really needs to be done with parenting, so the children are not exposed to all of this. Because they're at these ages where they're forming their identity, they're forming how to have relationships and who they are and how to interact with the outside and the world. And if they see that's how their parents interact, and there's no boundaries, and you're allowed to pick on anything, and nothing's safe to not talk about, or nothing's, you know, like a sacred thing that we don't discuss, it becomes, then they come out that it's okay that they can accept others speaking like that to them. Then they can speak to people like that. And there's almost no self-control. There's no respect that's taught.
I know. I think it's a very difficult situation because children are pretty defenseless as far as defending themselves. You know, as an adult, you can walk out the door and just say, well, I don't like being mistreated like this. I'm not saying it's easy in many cases. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I was very, very fortunate that my ex-husband walked out on me because I could have lingered there for many more years not having the strength to do what I needed to do. Because I saw how beaten down a strong individual can become in a short amount of time when you're living with someone who's controlling and sociopathic in behavior and, you know, making you feel that you don't have any value and everything you're doing is wrong. And you keep getting these messages day in and day out, and then you become someone who you're not. And I saw that happen to me. So I always have that empathy for women who are, you know, running around in circles and going nowhere because, you know, their husbands are running them around. But, you know, it's really hard sometimes to walk away from that. I know that I didn't have the strength because I didn't, you know, I was told you can't make on your own. If you think you're walking out, I'm taking the kids, you'll never see them. I've always felt threatened and I always felt intimidated. And I many times felt like not going on. You know, I just didn't think I could make it through another day. And walking on eggshells would have been a pleasure for me. I was like stomping on those, getting stomped on instead of, you know, the eggshells were cutting my feet up. So it was a really bad situation for me. And I'm a really strong woman. I started out strong, and I just got beaten down to a pummel, or pummeled down to like nothing. So how do women who don't even start out strong ever survive this? So can you teach women, like, strategies on how they can get stronger while they're living in a situation so they can get out?
Yes. I think one is having the awareness that the people who are predators, people that are abusers, they're setting you up. They are grooming you to keep you in this position. This doesn't happen overnight. It's a slow, insidious process. So I think by the person saying, you know, I was a really strong person, this would never happen to me, what's wrong with me, why did I allow this? I think taking a step back and say, okay, I'm in this situation, I'm not going to judge myself anymore and be hard on myself. I'm going to say, I'm going to explore what's going on. I'm going to start building up my self-confidence and then start setting boundaries. I think if it's not a safe, obviously, emotionally or physically situation, planning kind of your exit plan. And I think when I work with a lot of women who are in domestic violence, leaving right away is not an option. It's not safe for them. It's not safe for their children.
Right.
So it's, you know, gathering papers, birth certificates, any type of bank statement, maybe starting a bank, an account somewhere else. Start building, kind of like building a little life for yourself, so you have a plan, so you're not just leaving stuck, you know, with nothing to go on. So having that, I think, and also trying to reach out to some support systems, trying to work on yourself, and also almost put on an emotional armor, which is very hard when someone is emotionally, physically abusing you, to be able to kind of try to change your thought patterns when your mind, your own mind, starts going to those negative thoughts, what you're, you know, what he's told you, who you are, what you are, you're never going to make it, and try to work with yourself not to let yourself start going through that kind of, I say, like a monologue in your head of what's wrong with you, this is what it is, and being able to stop that, you know, doing breathing exercises, positive self-affirmations. Some of my clients, you know, read the Bible, read prayers, watch different self-help things, you know, with your radio show, listening to things, to start building your support and also building your self-confidence, because it's very hard to want to start over when you don't think you're worth it. And I think really being able to work on yourself, saying you are worth it and telling yourself you're worth it, even if you don't believe it in the beginning, and really trying to find, you know, finding a support system, trying, you know, getting into therapy and really starting to address what's going on.
I think that's a major part of it. I think another part is women in general, you know, that we are a lot of times economically, you know, stranded into bad relationships, and that's something we need to work on. You know, I always tell women, even if you take one step at a time, you know, it's not a contest or a race. You just have to keep moving. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to go back to school, take some courses, get some skills so that you can be financially, you know, independent. Because some women are just very dependent. You know, they say, well, I can't leave. I have no way to support myself. I'm totally, you know, and he's never going to give me the money, and I can't get a divorce. You know, so you have to start, you know, taking some steps too. You know, I always say that there's a way out if you really want to get out. And I don't think it's going to necessarily be a quick exit. Like you're saying, you have to do planning. You have to get yourself together. And I've worked with women, one woman who will probably be listening to this broadcast, who I love. It took her, you know, almost 4 years, you know, of going on a plan. But she was determined to make it through. And I always told her, she would say, well, you must be disappointed. I'm never disappointed. I don't say there's any time limit here. As long as you're moving, it's when you're stuck and you see no way out and you don't want to find a way out. You know, there's always a way out. Mm-hmm. You just have to want to really find it and see it. And nobody said it's going to be easy, right?
No, no, and it's not.
It's hard,
I think,
work.
Yes, and that's why, you know, building a support team. Maybe even, you know, taking a free course, going to the library, just even going out for a walk 10 minutes a day by yourself and schedule something that's just for yourself. Because I think women have been so trained to take care of everybody else, to help everybody else. Don't be selfish. Don't take care of yourself, that you give to so many other people. You're caring for so many other people. You're not caring for yourself. You have to do that for yourself, even if you don't believe it. You have to, you know, do, maybe start exercising, going for a walk, taking time to really let your mind relax, maybe read a book, do something to start building up your confidence and also your strength.
And you know what? Sometimes, you're going to laugh when I tell you this, you have to hide that from the person you're with. Because I know that, you know, I've been running a GED program for many years now. I have my own GED center for people who drop out of high school. And, you know, I service probably around 800 people a year to help them, you know, on their road to independence by getting their high school diploma. And I always tell them on the first day of school, people may be cheering you on today, but in a few weeks from now, those same cheerleaders may be trying to, you know, tear you down because you are the ultimate caretaker. I said, let's be honest in here. How many people in here are the ultimate caretakers? And it's about three quarters or more of the class. Because when you don't feel as good as or that something is missing, even a high school diploma, it takes its toll on how people perceive you, that you're stupid, you're lazy, and they make these comments and you start believing them, even though you're not. So When you start doing something for yourself, usually it's because you want to move up. And a lot of people don't want you moving up because that's going to threaten their sense of security. And in these abusive marriages, that's a prime example. I tell my students that if you start doing for yourself, you know, many times it's because you want to get out of the situation, and that person knows it, that if you become independent, you're not going to want to have to sit there anymore and take, you know, what you're taking. So I think sometimes you have to hide it. Would you agree with that or no?
Yes, and I find that it does. You do have to hide it because when you're in an abusive relationship, that type, they isolate you. So you're not growing mentally, physically, emotionally. You're not educating yourself. You're not reaching out to other people where other people are saying, no, that's not what you're supposed to be dealing with. And I think also when one person is getting healthy, I always tell people when they start therapy, when one person in the family or the relationship is getting healthy, it sometimes causes a huge disruption in the system because one person is getting healthy. Now, you're not the identified patient anymore. You're not the identified problem of the family. You're getting healthy. So the spotlight's on everybody else and what they're doing or what they're not doing. And they don't want that because now they have to change. They have to take responsibility for something. So I think they'll, you know, consciously or subconsciously don't want you to change because now they have to, that forces them, they have to start working on themselves. Maybe now they have to start, you know, you're busy with school, you're not coming home. They have to start, you know, shopping for themselves. They have to start making their own dinner. They're going to have to start paying their own bills. And a lot of people don't want to do that. I think that's a huge red flag, too. If you're in a relationship and someone is very threatened by you, and, you know, empowering yourself, improving yourself, and becoming a better person, that is something, a really huge red flag to take inventory of and say, wait a minute, am I going to deal with living in somebody's shadow for the rest of my life, or can I be proud of my accomplishment and wanting to be a better person? When you're in a healthy relationship, you're supposed to bring out the best in both and want the best and have good intentions. So I find when these things start coming up, it's, you know, it's a red flag, and it's something for the people to really think about and say, you know, this is what's going to happen. I really have to, you know, to be strong and be able to keep doing what I'm doing and not get discouraged.
You know, talking about that, I think that you can appreciate this. We have part of our network for our straight wives, Janine Finelli, who's an amazing health coach. You know, she's trained under Dr. Oz. She's featured in Oprah's magazine this month, in fact, in the May issue. And she's, you know, a straight wife who came from a very abusive marriage. And, you know, she pretty well sums it up. She has on her hands tattooed, love is kind. And it's very true, as you know, that she's learned that, you know, what love isn't. People who proclaim to love you, that, you know, are trying to control you and keep you down, that's not love. Love is kind. You know, I always say love doesn't hurt. You know, it's another version of what she says. But, you know, when somebody loves you, you're not supposed to be hurting all the time and crying with that person and going to bed crying and not feeling good about yourself, because that's not love either. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I almost use the metaphor as it's a roller coaster, and you have to choose: are you going to keep going on that emotional roller coaster? And it's always coming up, and I think that's when you start realizing something's not right. I mean, it can't go from high to high, low to low. Yes, you know, in life, people, there's problems, there's life events that are upsetting, people disagree, but if you're going from one extreme to the next extreme, back and forth, that's very dangerous, and that's also very exhausting. And then your body, your mind gets used to that, that kind of fight or flight syndrome, that high, the lows, that anything like just like a regular life almost becomes boring. And I think that's another thing to really look at too, because sometimes people say, you know, I don't know if I can find someone else that I really like, you know, they're boring. It's saying, what have I been used to, this emotional roller coaster going up and down? And when if you've lived it all your life with, you know, in your childhood, and then now you're married to someone like that, it's really, mm-hmm. I think, being the awareness of, are you able to get off that emotional roller coaster?
Well, I think that's so true. And some people, I think, thrive on that roller coaster. It's like I have a friend of mine, you know, older than I am, but, you know, she's very young at heart and young looking and young acting. And she's always finding guys who are, you know, not the right guys for her. She always needs that edge. And she always says, well, I don't know why I don't like a nice guy. They're boring. You know, nice guys are boring. And I say, well, then there's a problem with you. You know, you can't complain that you're meeting all these crappy guys, but nice guys are boring. I mean, mm-hmm. nice guys don't have to be boring, right?
No, and I'm not saying to settle just for a boring person. Yeah, I'm not saying not to, you know, that you're not supposed to settle at all, but I think it's watch what you're attracted to.
She's bored. You know, the person's mm-hmm. not boring, but right away, if a person's respectable, you know, they have, you know, if they're educated, you know, that's not what she's looking for. But yet she's always disappointed in her other choices. And she always says, I wish I could really want somebody who's not. I have to send her to you for therapy.
Okay.
I'll be calling you and she'll be calling you this week. But people need to see why they're making it and repeating the same mistakes over and over and over, and you can help them with that, right?
Yes. Yes, I can. I think there's patterns in relationships. There's patterns in behaviors and what you're looking for and what you're used to. And I think it's, you know, finding out, you know, life isn't ups and downs. It should be kind of, you know, stable for most part. It shouldn't be so dramatic. And I think it's saying if you are outright choosing these people or getting yourself into these serious situations, one, what are you trying to reenact? And two, how do you feel about yourself? Do you feel like you deserve better? Because I think it comes a time where you say, I don't deserve to be treated like this. This is not what I want. And know that mm-hmm. you deserve better, that there is something, there is better out there. You know, that you don't have to settle for that, you know, oh, he's great, but sometimes he gets angry and pushes me. No, that's not like saying, you know, he snores at night. No, that's not the same deal breaker. You can't, you know, this is very serious. I think it's really uh-huh. prioritizing and picking what's a deal breaker and what's something that's, you know, a compromise or something that you just accept because it's not a big deal. Maybe he doesn't like to clean the bathroom. That's different. But don't, you know, relate that to he gets angry and slams doors and punches walls. That's, you know, two different things. And I think people kind of get stuck in that and uh-huh. they start saying, well, but he or she does this, and they're good at that. They're a good father. They just, you know, get stressed out at work and do that. I think, you know, people have to be held accountable. And I think when you start making excuses is when you start really getting in trouble, and you really start saying, okay, what am I getting myself into, and why am I settling for this type of behavior? Why do I feel like I deserve this behavior or that I can't deserve to be treated, you know, better?
And I think that's what it comes down to. A lot of times women are just so willing to settle, like they think they don't, you know, deserve anything better. And I always like to use this example. Did you ever see the movie Oliver?
A long, long, long time ago.
Yeah, it was a great musical, probably before you were born, because I know that I was 18 and watching it. But I don't think you were even conceived of then, nevertheless conceived. But anyway, it was a really good musical. And, you know, it was about, in England, these orphan boys who were, you know, working for this gangster kind of guy. But in it, what I'll never forget, what impressed me, not impressed me, but stayed on my most important impression, there's a woman in there, I think it's Shani Wallace is her name. She sings this song, and this guy's abusing her all the time, you know, and treating her like crap, and she's running for him day and night. And she sings, you know, wherever, whenever he needs me, I know just where I'll be. You ever hear that song?
I think so.
Whenever he needs me, I know just where I'll be. And, you know, she's singing, and if he needs me, da-da-da-da. You know, no matter what he needs, she's going to be there for him. And in the end, he ends up killing her, you know, literally. And women are just, you know, they get beat down and they, you know, they really think they can make men love them. They think if they try hard enough, these men are going to change. Do these men change?
I would say in my years of practice, I would say 99% no. Maybe if someone has really great therapy, they've been in for many, many years, I find it's very, very hard to change. I think when there's domestic violence. And there's there's emotional abuse. If the person is able to acknowledge it and really explore it and work on ways to address it, that's a different story. But it does not happen overnight. And I think that's what gets people see it as, well, he's just passionate about me. He just loves me so much. He gets so passionate. But he really needs me. When he's really down or upset, I need to be there to save him. That's not love. That's not passion.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's what women need to understand. You have to think more of yourself than to settle for when he needs you. I mean, there's more to life than a man needing you. But I think that comes when women don't love themselves enough. I know, you know, I'm certainly no role model. I always tell my women, I hope you do a better job at yourself than I did with me. Because it took me so long to learn to love myself. And until you learn to love yourself, then you can never truly love somebody else in a healthy, positive way, that you're always going to be looking to make that person happy in spite of how you feel and neglecting your own needs, which doesn't make you happy. That's not what I call a partnership. Would you say that's true?
Yes. It's not a partnership. I think when you're in love with someone and you're with someone, you want the other person to be happy. You can't love someone else until you learn to love yourself. And learn to accept your flaws, your good things, your bad things. You have to be able to, because if you can't do that with yourself, how are you going to do that with somebody else? And I think then you overcompensate, and you let them do whatever they want because you know you're such a hard judge on yourself. You don't judge them. And I think it's saying, you know, this there has to be boundaries. There has to be certain, you know, moral codes going on that people have to live by. And I think by saying, you know what, sometimes love isn't enough. If there's violence, if there's other things, and I think what happens is you grow up or you see all these amazing love stories on television and there's passion and drama. Most relationships aren't like that. It's, you know, people go to work, it's calm, it's supposed to be like that. So I'm not sure people get confused and think that's what a relationship's supposed to be, this undying love and the fighting and the dramatics and the, you know, all this heavy, heavy stuff. I think sometimes it's being able to have kind of an even keel in your relationship. And it shouldn't be always one person chasing the other, one person, you know, distancing themselves, the other person chasing and kind of reversing that role. It should be, you know, 50-50 at some point and be able to feel open with each other and safe with each other.
So here's another thing I would like to bring up. And I know this is a very unpleasant subject, especially for people who have been part of my network for a long time. And some of my women have been with me for a number of years because healing is a process. I think a lot of times there's residual scarring depending on how many years you're married. You know, women who have spent their whole life being in an abusive marriage, it does take a long time. There's no quick fix to any of this. It's a constant, you know, process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's why some women have been with me, and some women are giving back now that they've been healed. You know, they like to pay forward, as they call it, and help others. And people who know me, and, you know, there's a number of my women who really know me well, they always feel very bad on Mother's Day because, you know, as I mentioned to you, I lost both of my children within the last 10 or 12 years. My daughter was 22 and my son was 23. And, of course, there is no greater loss I feel in life than a child, but that doesn't, of course, negate anybody else's loss. I always tell people, you know, people say, oh, my God, how can I complain? Because no pain is equal. And just because, you know, I've had pain doesn't mean that you don't have pain, too. I tell women, don't be ridiculous. My pain is different than your pain, but it's all pain.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I would like to tell women is my message of part of healing, and I know that Alexa is very big on the healing issue and helping people heal. One of the things that I have found that has made a difference in my life, so I don't go into dark holes very often at all, is that you have to find a purpose. That sometimes just having, you know, to redirect yourself into doing something that can make a difference, not just for you, but for other people, can really turn you around also in feeling like you have a reason to go on. And I know for me, it was a matter of helping people through my work that I do or through my, you know, teaching that I do. But I always feel that every day I'm helping somebody's life change for the better, and that's my particular purpose. And there are so many people who are out there in need that really could use help that sometimes it's good to focus outside yourself also to try to put something back in, you know, other than just worrying about you, that it's sometimes good to refocus your thinking on other people, not to do away with what your problems are, but to also, you know, do something else to give yourself some type of purpose. Now, do you feel that's good or no?
Yes, I agree with that. I find myself saying this to colleagues, to friends, to family members. I am so grateful and blessed that I'm able to be a therapist. My clients that I work with are the most resilient, powerful, inspiring men and women that I've ever met. It really puts life into perspective for me. It really makes me say, wow, I mean, there's some tough things in life, but there's hope. There's people that are resilient, people that overcome such horrible events in their life, and it's just so inspiring, and really it strengthens you. Helping somebody else, working with somebody else, you know, supporting somebody else and empowering them is such a powerful tool. And mm-hmm. also makes you feel so good about yourself. It's very humbling. It's very humbling. But it's also saying, wow, I have an impact. And I think when you've been in an abusive relationship, you don't feel like you matter. You don't feel like anyone sees you. You don't feel like whatever you say, do, or anything, like you don't have an impact. And for you to be able to see that you actually have an impact on someone, you make a difference, is amazing. And I get that gift every day, which I think I'm so lucky to have, because my mom always says, if you help one person in this life, you know, it's a good thing. And I'm like, wow, I get to help people as my job. That's what I do. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's amazing work. It really, really is amazing work. And you don't have to, you know, be perfect yourself. You don't have to have everything. No one has everything in order. We all have issues. We all have things going on. No one's perfect. So I think mm-hmm. it's just doing what you have, what your gift is, and finding out what that is. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know, cooking for people who don't have food, working in a homeless shelter, counseling people on drugs, you know, doing something, working with children, teaching them how to read. It is such, paying it forward is such amazing, amazing work. It really makes a huge difference.
It does, and I think it also helps as far as you building your self-esteem because of the fact that when you're so feeling so down about yourself and you're thinking, well, how can I feel better about me? Every time you're helping someone, it's a building block towards making you feel better about yourself.
Yes.
And I always tell people I have to validate myself like 1,000 times over per each day because there's something missing in me that I feel that I can never help enough. That, you know, it does, you know, I just love to help people because I feel that I've been helped in my life. You know, I've had people there reaching out for me when I was down, when I was out, and it does make a difference. We're all connected in one way or another. So I think that reaching out, helping, paying forward, doing something to help people make a difference. It doesn't have to be every day of your life, but, you know, once a week, go out and do something, whether it's the Lions Club or a Special Olympics or going to a hospital, reading to children in a hospital. I know that, you know, I mentioned to you I lost my son Jason. You know, it was the major heartbreak of my life because he was born with a rare disease that only about 800 children in the country have. And he really fought this disease, and he was 23 when he passed away, when his, you know, he had a disease where his body couldn't fight infection. Every mm-hmm. infection could possibly be his last. But he put in 24 hours a day in his life. He ran around the world. He went to all different countries. He went bungee jumping, scuba diving. And he was a junior in college becoming a teacher because he loved children and wanted to help them. But the thing is that, you know, when he would be in the hospital when he was younger, and sometimes he was there for, you know, 4 and 5 months at a time. It wasn't just like an overnight stay. I would see so many of these little children who were so scared, sitting in a hospital without a parent, crying, you know, locked in a crib, not knowing what was going on with them because there was nobody there. You know, their parents weren't there and the nurses couldn't stay with them. They're busy doing nursing. So I think to myself, you know, how nice it would be if people could go and just spend one day a week doing something to make a child feel loved, or go to the dollar store and buy a couple little animals to give to them with stuffed animals. You know, things that don't mean that much to you, but they can make a whole difference in somebody's sense of peace and security. So I think that's the message I want to leave with people today. Part of healing yourself is giving to others. And I'm being honest with you, Alexa, because I have a lot of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guests and co-hosts and co-hostesses for my show. But I always feel so much better after I'm done with you. Like, I feel like I can always sleep peacefully at night. And I do want to mention to people, again, that if you go to gayhusbands.com, on my right-hand side of resources, you'll see Alexa's information there. So if you can't have a pencil, write down the spelling of her last name. Don't panic. Just go to my website, and you'll find Alexa's, you know, information there at gayhusbands.com. Or you can go to Facebook to Insight for Healing, and you'll see her page there about her show. And the best part, which, you know, I seem to not have connected with enough on our last conversation, is that people can get you from anywhere. You know, they can do phone counseling with you because you do accept insurance, right?
Yes, yes. And also, with a show that I do, people can write in questions. I really have become very accessible.
Boy, I think I'm going to have people lining up outside your phone. I'll keep you busy for a while after this week. But I do feel that you are wonderful, and I'm really looking forward this summer to meeting you in person when I come into New York.
Yeah.
And with some of our other women, hopefully you'll meet with them also, because you have so much to offer, and I am so appreciative of your joining us on the show and really making people feel better, starting with me.
Thank
I wasn't
you.
Feeling great today, but you really did help me feel better, Alexa. I always feel better
Thank
when
you.
I talk to you.
Thank
all right,
you.
So we want to say to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week. Alexa, hopefully you'll be back with us in a couple months to
yes,
share your
definitely.
Wisdom and maybe share that list with us of what to look for in a therapist.
Yes.
I'll share that with all the women in my newsletter when you're ready. And thank you so much for being part of our network. And I do love you, even though I haven't met you yet, but when you do, you're getting a big hug from me.
Oh, thank
Just
you.
Just be ready for it.
I am.
All right, sweetie. So I'll talk to you soon. And to all
okay.
our listeners, good night. I'll be with you next week. Have a pleasant
week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.